I'm Judy Drummond, and my show is Connecting the Dots. My engineer is Jim Rigsby, who you can listen to on Grinders Grooveyard for 50s and 60s oldies every Monday from 8:30 to 11:30. I'm honored to have as my guest today in the studio here, Laura Foot Clark, who is the executive director of YIMBY, and we'll talk about that in a minute. And Sam Moss is the executive director of Mission Housing. Obviously, we're going to talk about housing. Hi, Laura, what is YIMBY? Why don't you tell us that first?
Yeah. So YIMBY Action, that's Y-I-M-B-Y, stands for Yes in My Backyard. We are a pro-housing advocacy group with a membership of just under 300 about that advocates for increasing housing, not just in San Francisco, but throughout the Bay Area, and generally promotes an idea that people want to live in cities, and we need to build transit-rich, dense, social justice-oriented cities where people from a variety of background can afford to live and work in integrated communities.
Is that only here in San Francisco?
So we focus right now in San Francisco and Oakland, and we have some members in the South Bay, and we also are helping people start YIMBY organizations in cities around California and actually also nationally. So we have some like proto YIMBY groups in Sacramento, and people are starting things in Vancouver. There's associated groups who do cool stuff in New York City. There's a bunch of awesome people who do YIMBY work in Seattle. You know, it's really sort of a movement that's gaining a lot of traction across the country.
Okay, Sam, tell us a little bit about Mission Housing, and then we'll talk about housing in general.
Mm-hmm. Good, that's all I like to talk about anyway. So, so Mission Housing is a 45-year-old nonprofit affordable housing developer. Since 1971, we've been building and owning and running 100% low-income affordable housing for families, seniors, and then also single-room occupancy, formerly homeless, supportive housing as well.
Wow.
Yeah, and I agree.
It's been pretty successful.
I'd like to think so. You know, we have about 3,000 tenants, 32 buildings, I believe, and we're working on building another three right now. So hopefully,
do you do senior housing?
We do senior housing. Yeah, we built specifically senior housing, but now we're kind of seeing a trend where when we build family housing, we also include one bedrooms and studios in that housing so that people can age in place when they no longer need a two or a three bedroom.
That's nice.
Yeah, it makes for
long-term? It's long-term thinking.
Exactly, yeah. And that's one of my favorite parts about Mission Housing is that what we do now will have a positive effect for decades and decades to come.
So you two working together, you work with building the housing and you work with advocating for it?
So YIMBY advocates for both subsidized affordable housing and market rate housing. We think that in order to address the housing, I mean, we've chronically underbuilt in the Bay Area for more than 30 years.
What does that mean?
It means year after year, we did not build the kind of housing and we did not build enough housing in total. And so
compared to the jobs that we
compared to the jobs and
people moving here.
Yeah. So like since the 90s, especially, more and more people have been kind of returning to cities and saying, we want to live in cities.
Yeah, well, because there was an exodus of people leaving the city. There was the white flight in the 70s. And, you know, people, and then there's a lot of urban people of color, and the service workers now have no place to live.
Yeah.
They're the ones mainly being priced out, and lower income people. And there's that influx of tech people in. We need to talk about that, too.
Yeah. And we say that basically, if we had been building housing, you know, based on the needs of people, we could have had people return to cities and not displace people. That if we had built the housing that was needed, and we still need to address that, you know, people returning to cities doesn't mean that other people have to leave.
It shouldn't.
That we can grow the pie. Right? We have chronically underbuilt housing decade after decade after decade, and now we're in a shortage. And in any shortage, rich people win. And so in order to fully address this crisis, we need to end the shortage. We need to build a lot more housing. Like a third of the city is zoned single-family homes.
That's an amazing statistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What does that mean, zoned? I mean, is it a reality?
Yeah,
it means the type of building that's allowed is a single-family home. So you can't get it. Even a quote-unquote dense two- or three- or four-story building, multifamily, mixed-use with commercial on the ground floor. That's not within the zoning.
What parts of the city are mostly in that one-third?
A lot of our outlying neighborhoods. So
Richmond.
So the western side of the city.
Western and southern a lot. You know, and there are people who, you know, rely on their cars. They focus on parking a lot of the time. They think that if we build housing in their neighborhood, it's going to be to the detriment of their quality of life. You know, and I would say that, like, we need to turn the city around. We need to build a lot more housing in those neighborhoods. We also need transit in those neighborhoods. But instead of doing both transit and building housing, we've done neither. And now our city is kind of crumbling, and especially low-income people are in crisis because there's not enough pie to go around.
And it's kind of a catch-22 when you think about it. If the higher socioeconomic class wants better transportation, they will get better transportation.
Yes.
You know, I always like to talk about, there's a bus that goes from Mission Bay to 16th and Valencia now, right, at the 55 bus. I mean, it's glorious. It's so nice and clean, and it runs on time, and it's literally the people in Mission Bay who arguably...
And Mission Bay is where all the new hospitals
and a lot of tech and biotech research money, and they wanted a cool, hip way to get to the mission, and then it, boom, it existed. And so, you know, when we talk about not getting more housing because there isn't high quality or the proper transportation, you know, I say that that's because we won't let high quality housing be built out, you know, like, and they come together.
What about out at in Hunter's Point? They're building all these. I love to take people on tours of Hunter's Point.
Yeah.
Where you have these big, massive apartments being built, condos, whatever they are, and they're right next to the projects, which are all decaying and falling apart. What's going to happen? And the schools up there have all pretty much closed because there's not many, no places, there's no children left, or a few. But, you know, this is the displacement of people. And yet, who's going to want to live out there when there's no bus lines?
If I could speak to that. Just on a side note, the word project kind of has a negative connotation. I do understand where it comes from. It's based in a fear and distrust of the redevelopment agency. And they really technically are projects. You know, they were built and chronically underfunded and not taken care of. But San Francisco's affordable housing industry, the private nonprofits like Mission Housing have decided to take that burden on ourselves.
Really?
And we're all rebuilding every single public housing building in the city, just like you just described. So
starting when?
It started. It's actually already started. So those people will not be displaced. They will have to temporarily relocate when we go.
Well, I know Bernal Heights Community Foundation is working with Holly Park.
Yes, exactly.
And that, with the housing there. And that's been very successful. I know that.
Yeah, I think that the move from public housing, which was government subsidized and owned, is something that our industry, you know, no longer believes is perhaps the most efficient, best way to do it. So if the government provides a subsidy, then a private nonprofit developer will take that subsidy and then build and own the building. And that's really Mission Housing's model.
How will the federal cutbacks that Trump is making?
It's going to be disastrous.
It's scary.
Yeah. It's going to impact our housing.
Cutting $6 billion from HUD means cutting $6 billion from companies like Mission Housing. And when you think about our 1,600 some odd units, you know, there's a lot of Section 8 subsidy there. And
well, you can't even get a Section 8 right now.
You can't get
almost impossible.
Yeah, you can't get a new project-based Section 8 there. But there's a new program called RAD, the Rental Assistance Program, and it's a lot like Section 8, and it's from HUD. But yeah, you're right. The Section 8 program has effectively been cut off.
And that's been coming for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been cutting funding and cutting funding and cutting funding to our public housing and to our subsidized nonprofits for a long time.
We're like 1980s funding level, basically, right now. So.
And YIMBY definitely believes we need to increase the money that goes.
I'm having a fainting attack.
Yeah. No, it's terrible. I mean, we need a lot more money. So, for instance, actually, there's a bill in the State Assembly, AB 71, I believe, that David Chu recently proposed that's going to, you know, have a marginal impact. It's a perfectly good piece of legislation. It is going to get rid of the mortgage interest tax deduction that we put on second homes. It's complicated, but basically, if you have a second home, you are getting to take mortgage interest tax deductions. It's going to eliminate that and take that money and put it into our subsidized affordable nonprofit housing. And that's a good piece of legislation. It's a drop
Sounds
in the...
Sounds complicated.
It is. I mean, anything you do where you cut taxes here and move that money over, you know, it's a little bit complicated. But the basic root of the bill and why David Chu is putting it forward is to say, where are places where we can get more money into our subsidized affordable housing?
That aren't federal.
That aren't
like
federal.
How can California take
care
of
itself? So we have to come up with all kinds of new things because we know it's coming.
Yeah.
Well, and
yeah.
Also because no one wants to address the elephant in the room, which is Prop 13 and how we don't tax our property owners at the rate that
Talk
we really should
be. Talk about Prop 13 while we're on here.
Yeah.
Touch that third rail.
Yeah. I'm going to say my story.
Yes. Okay.
Okay. So when I was just out of college, I'm way old, and my roommate said, oh, you've got to hear this guy. He's going to be governor and president. He's the most wonderful person. So she's talking about Ronald Reagan. So I go to this meeting with her, and it's the John Birch Society. It's like, I almost lost my breath. It's and Reagan's sitting up there on the dais. How do you say that word?
Dais. Yeah.
With who were the heads of who started it? Those white men who lived in Orange County and wanted to protect their own homes. Mm-hmm. And so they were talking about they did not want to pay for immigrants to go to school, to their schools. Mm-hmm. They did not want to pay for immigrants to have food, to get, you know, to be there. And immigrants was their main objection. And they pushed Prop 13 through. That was what? How long
70s.
Ago? 70s.
Yeah.
70s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, I think it's important just to go back to the mortgage interest tax deduction. A lot of wealthy people that do rail against subsidized housing don't realize that we've been giving them four times the amount of subsidy than we have ever spent on low-income
housing. For an example, I pay $700 a year in property taxes because I bought my house before.
Wow.
And I'm going to try not to hate you for that.
Yeah.
And then after, some people who bought similar house are paying $7,000 to $10,000 a year.
In Burlington. Yeah.
And Prop 13, I mean, at its root.
That's a big deal.
It's a lot of money. It's a big differential. And Prop 13 really is an anti-newcomers law. Like, it both affects, you know, newcomers who buy housing newer rather than older, but also the money that we would be spending on schools, infrastructure, all of the ways in which we sort of create a civil society, you know, when you don't tax wealthy property owners, you let the rest of the community sort of fall apart. And then these little cities and towns, you know, all up and down the Bay Area, in order to make up for that gap, they put taxes and fees on often new development. So anytime somebody wants to come in and build new apartments, they're like, you know, they're like salivating. They're like, ah, ha, ha, you know, big developer cash. And so they put big taxes and fees on new, often, apartments.
How has this worked with in San Francisco? I hear there's a big pile of money from all these new buildings.
If you find it, I'd love to have
it. Yeah, I mean, we have to find, you know, they find all different kinds. I mean, it's why we have our ballot is like 10 miles long with all of these little parcel taxes and this is and that. It's because we don't want to admit that we just need to repeal Prop 13 and do things in a straightforward manner.
Prop 13 also is, I think, the main reason why we have such a large jobs to housing ratio imbalance.
What's that mean?
So, for every job that you theoretically create in the city, say a new person is going to move there, but we are not building a new unit of housing for that person. So down in Mountain View, right? Google has a gazillion jobs, right? And Mountain View's built like negative 500 housing units in, you know, the last 20
years.
Where do
they live?
San Francisco. San Francisco.
And other places around the Bay
Area. Those are those big buses they transport
exactly.
their workers down
right,
there.
Right, and so, but they...
Free buses.
Yeah, well, those jobs, though, that is really the only way for the towns to make revenue on an annual basis with payroll taxes and taxing the companies and things like that. You can do that, you know, but building new housing with, even when you do build that new housing, Prop 13 is going to freeze the taxes in that year. So it's just going to start the process all over
again. Well, a lot of housing that was here in the city, SRO, single room occupancy, where a lot of seniors lived. And homeless people, the city had set aside places where they could stay. A lot of it, I know, has been turned over to these techies.
So,
or what do you call them?
I mean,
yeah,
or
newcomers of all kinds. Like, I think, like, this is the problem, is that we didn't build housing, and we continue to not build housing. And so, like, when you don't build housing, you know, the anybody who's got a good job or anything, you know, is going to be able to bid up the price of the market. And the only way to alleviate that is to build a lot more housing.
And, well, and landlord, people who own buildings want to make money.
Yeah,
so
and
we could
socialize the entire institution of our housing market. You know, there are, like, Hong Kong built massive amounts of public housing, like, but I don't see that, you know, if you can come up with a way for California to actually decide to do that, maybe I would sign on. But, you know, as it is, we do need the market to build housing. And a lot of people look at the current situation and they think, oh, this is like letting the free market run amok. And that's actually the opposite of what we've done. We have frozen in amber vast areas of our city and allowed a little bit of housing to go up in a few areas like, you know, SoMa and whatnot, where we said, okay, you can get away with building a lot of housing there because it's not going to upset the West Side homeowners.
And the surrounding towns are just doing nothing.
Yeah.
Right? So the burden is on San Francisco. It would be a burden, I think, even if the towns were doing something, because a lot of people, look, this is a metropolis. This is like the greatest place on earth. I love living here.
We'll talk about, continue that in just a second. This is KPOO San Francisco, 89.5 FM, and this is Judy Drummond. My show is Connecting the Dots, and I'm speaking with Laura Foote Clark and Sam Moss. Laura is the executive director of YIMBY, Yes in My Backyard, and Sam is the executive director of Mission Housing. So what's this about the metropolis thing?
So
what does that mean, and
San Francisco,
how does it affect us?
San Francisco is an incredibly desirable place to live. The weather's awesome. It never really changes past perfect.
I live in North Beach,
you know, and I work in the Mission. It's sunny all day.
I like San Francisco, but let's not try to pretend the weather's always perfect.
You know, okay.
You can always sleep with a blanket.
Agree to disagree. Okay. Yeah. But, I mean, you know, you look at just where it is, its proximity to mountains and beach. It's the financial epicenter of one of the largest economies in the world. You know, tech was technically invented nearby, and has really moved into downtown San Francisco.
And I would put a larger thing. People want to live in, you know, cities.
Yeah, in just I think there's a move back to urban cities.
Yeah. Well, it's more fun.
It's more fun, you know, bars, life.
I don't own a car. I don't ever want to own a car, you know.
It's a whole lifestyle shift, I think, too. People don't want to live in, you know, we all watched the depressing movies in the 80s and 90s about how living in the suburbs was going to eat your soul, and we learned that lesson, and we want to live in cities. We want to live in, like, places where you can walk, and all the statistics bear this out, too, that, like, you're healthier when you live in cities. It's vibrant. Your income is up. Even for people with low-skilled worker, if you live in a city, you're better able to leverage that and to get better paying jobs. You know, there's a reason that cities are this you know, shining beacon to a lot of people, a place of opportunity. But San Francisco has decided that it doesn't want to attract new people, and it wants to sort of tamp down that as much as possible. And I do think that there's a really, you know, people who have power in the city definitely don't want to open the doors. You know, I think this gets back to, like, you know, sanctuary city. Like, if we're really going to be a sanctuary city, we need to build housing. You know, it's meaningless to say we're a sanctuary city if people cannot afford to live and work in this city and cannot come and join us here.
Expect people who need help.
Correct.
Especially people who need help.
I mean, even if someone gets a job in a restaurant, or cleaning toilets or whatever, you know, it's not entry-level work.
Yeah.
While they're going to school, because now we have free education at San Francisco City College, so people can take their English classes, they can get trades and stuff.
Totally.
But if they can't live here, what good is it?
I mean, I also think that, and I fully support building, you know, housing for everyone. I do think, though, that Millbrae should have to build those 300 units above its BART station.
Let's talk about the, you said there were how many?
About 101 is what, you know, different estimates, but people say there's about 101 municipalities that make up what should be an economically integrated Bay Area region.
The little
region.
Small towns.
All these little small towns. Silent. I know. I certainly couldn't think of all of
that
them.
That just boggles my mind. That's a, like, Emeryville,
Walnut Creek, yes. Brisbane,
Hayward,
yeah,
and they each have their own mayor, and they each have their own planning commission, and they each have their own, you know, city council,
entity.
And mm-hmm. charting its own independent destiny as if they were on the moon.
And they don't work together.
No,
God, no, the opposite. If anything, they work to, they strive to be little islands.
What about the bus lines?
Yeah, so good example. I have a unlimited Muni pass, the Clipper card, and I get on a train at 16th and Mission, and I take it up to Montgomery Station to get home every day. That same train goes all the way to Walnut Creek. My unlimited pass stops working when I pierce San Francisco, and so I have to pay to go. I can't just get an unlimited Bay Area pass. I don't think you can get pre-tax pass to take the ferry. So if you live in Vallejo and there's a ferry that literally goes right to your job, you have to pay a lot of money twice a day.
Wait, is this tax money?
All different kinds.
Yeah,
of
it's all kinds of different stuff. The way San Francisco does it is you can, in one of your paychecks, you can spend a little money pre-tax, and then you get a monthly pass, and it's through your employer.
But there's 28 different public transportation systems in the Bay Area. Yeah, 28.
They don't talk to each other either.
They don't talk to each other. You know, and that includes several that's, you know, San Francisco is Muni and BART, like, and they don't necessarily, you know, they don't really work together that
That's
well.
That's why it's so hard to get the BART stations built, why it takes so long, because you have to get so many different municipalities' approval, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And everyone wants their cut.
I mean, you look at the, you know, the high-speed train even, right? I mean, all the CEQA lawsuits that the trains
that?
Do. Oh, so CEQA is when you say that a project is going to negatively impact the environment where it's being built, you can file a lawsuit.
Oh, wait, Trump doesn't believe in that.
You're right. So let's throw it out the door.
Throw it out.
Housing for everyone.
But California definitely does. So it's the California Environmental Quality Act, which has had massive unintended consequences. You know, it was designed to, you know, force governments to actually study what the environmental impacts were. But
it's
instead,
being used to just stop projects.
Yeah, it gets abused. I mean, so this is it's a good thing to sort of understand the difference between infill and sprawl. So infill development is housing and other infrastructure, but things that are mostly housing built in existing communities. So you go in and you take a parking lot and you turn it into a 10-story apartment building. Any place where there's like roads and infrastructure and a place, and you go in and fill in the empty spaces, infill. And then you've got, on the other hand, sprawl, which is building new communities, new roads, and sprawling out. And so in California in general, we have restricted infill development, and we've allowed sprawl. And CEQA gets used a lot of cases.
Not getting that.
Okay. So infill sprawl, we get those two concepts. Like
infill means?
Infill means
an existing lot already exists, a gap between buildings.
Yeah. So there's space and you can build something. You just have to get permission from the city and the planning commission.
Whereas sprawl is like when we decided to build the 101 freeway down, you know, south.
To my family's homes like they did in L.A.
Yes,
you know?
And then you have another freeway that connects to the 101 that sends you out to wherever. Like, that's sprawl. We're sprawling away from a dense urban area.
Okay. And anytime you build, you know, when a developer comes out and has to build new roads, right, and has to build a whole new suburban community.
And lay all the piping and the water and all that, electricity.
Exactly. All that is sprawl.
Because there's nothing existing.
Nothing existing. Okay. It's really bad for the environment, right? Sprawl is thought of as horrible.
Cars are bad.
Yeah. and you're, you know, where you could be preserving natural places, instead we're sprawling out and building more and more and more suburban, you know, subdivisions out there, instead of building in our existing cities, densifying, and making, you know, making Millbrae a really cool hip city by building a lot of stuff, like
on top of a parking lot.
On top of a parking
lot. That's where they want to put it, right? We don't need to do new roads. We don't need new infrastructure. It's already there.
It's there.
It's right next to a
BART
station.
And it makes it much easier.
Well, you'd think it would.
And instead, yeah, what happens is people use this Environmental Quality Act, CEQA. They use this law to say, well, right here, when you build it, there might be a negative environmental consequence, right? You know, because a project takes place in a specific place. And so there's people who live here. And so I want you to study the environmental impact of building this building in this existing city. And they
That's
don't.
An environmental impact.
It's an environmental impact. They don't compare that to say, okay, we're not, if we build 100 units of housing right on top of this BART station versus 100 single family homes sprawled out, right? We're not comparing that. That's the choice we have. Are we going to build 100 units in a pristine environment out there in the sprawlandia, or are we going to do 100 units infill on a BART station, right? And instead, CEQA, because it's based on lawsuits, you know, the people who live close to that project are able to use this law to stop infill development.
Or to stall it long enough that the developer loses their loan.
Yeah. That's happened.
It happens a lot. How it's maybe not even so much the actual lawsuit as the fact that it's a mechanism
Give
to
me an
delay.
Example.
An example of a recent CEQA lawsuit. I guess we at 1515 South Van Ness.
Yeah.
That lawsuit did delay the project, and more community benefits did come.
What was there before?
It's a McMillan Electric.
Basically an empty building.
Yes.
Big. It takes up a whole block.
Yep.
Right. And so, you know, the community benefits were derived maybe from that lawsuit, and they are a lot more than the developer originally would have done. But it did delay the project, and the developer's financial, you know, who knows how it'll go. I do believe they filed a CEQA lawsuit to stop the Millbrae development, and that's not going, we don't know when that will happen.
So all people have to do is complain and file one of these lawsuits against the building. They can stop it. Yet if that building were built, it could house a lot of...
Yeah.
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 And low income housing.
And it's not just, it could be anybody housing, right? I mean, if we
mixed housing.
I mean, it could be, you know, we have what's called inclusionary laws. That's a complicated thing we can get into. But even if you're just building market rate housing, even if you're just building, you know, straightforward housing, you know, people live in that housing. If we don't build that housing, they're out there apartment hunting. You know, they're up there bidding up the cost of the existing housing.
I think an average apartment now is $3,500.
Yeah.
For sometimes one room or one bedroom.
With a line all the way down the block, around the block of people trying to upbid it so they could just get a room with a roof.
I mean, there's good jobs here. People want to live in San Francisco.
Who can afford to pay that much?
Well, somebody can. I mean, that's the problem, right? Is that there are good jobs. There are people who can't afford to pay that. And if, you know, I live currently in a rent-controlled, cute Victorian place. You know, and I spend, I want to say, gives me nerves. I spend $3,000 a month. I know. And I know that apartment, you know.
Most people don't make that much.
No, most people don't make that much.
No,
I don't either. I rely on my SO to help pay the bills.
What's the SO?
Oh, significant other.
Oh,
sorry.
Okay.
No acronyms.
Sorry.
We love our acronyms.
You know, it's obscene, and I know it's obscene, and also the apartment's frankly not that nice, right? I mean, I like it. It's cute, but it should be middle-income housing. Mm-hmm. Like a family, you know, would be very happy there. This should be middle-income housing, and, you know, we have the ability, because we don't have kids, you know, we have cats and whatnot, to spend, you know, a higher than we would like percentage of our income on this housing unit. You know, I wish that I didn't live there. I wish that I lived in a condo kind of thing, and this housing could be used by a lower income, you know, couple or
I think
a family.
The lack of supply also, just to go back on, you know, people getting pushed out and everything, it leads owners to be greedy and do underhanded things like, you know, evictions and owner move-ins and in the name of just making some more money. And the low income or middle income, the typical person doesn't have the capacity to go get a lawyer and fight a lawsuit because they're just trying to get by in the first place. And a lot of people get taken advantage of, and you know, that's horrible.
I know families that are, it's an old house, and they're, the owner converted the garage by putting in a sink and a stove and a refrigerator and a bathroom in the garage, and that's housing. And they're getting $2,400 a month for that.
Yeah.
And there are sometimes three families, and they have curtained off private space, bedrooms.
Yeah.
I know two families off the top of my head that are living like that. Three families in a garage.
No, it's terrible.
And they're working two jobs to afford it.
If I could just plug Mission Housing real quick. If anyone is in a situation where they feel like they're getting taken advantage of or they're getting evicted, even if they just want a support network, like, please go to missionhousing.org. You can call me, and you know, we'll put you in touch with someone that can help. Everyone has a lawyer.
Help?
I really want to stress that. You know, you're not alone.
Well, what kind of help can you give them?
Well, I mean, just the simple fact of having an eviction defense lawyer, you know, the being able to defend yourself. We have rules that say if an owner uses something called like an owner move-in, they have to pay you for that. If you get evicted, there are a lot of things that have to happen correctly for you to actually have to leave your apartment. And it's a rare owner that actually knows. They rely on fear and intimidation, and all of those things added up protect the tenant. But most tenants think, well, I don't have 10 grand for a lawyer.
And especially if they're not documented.
Exactly. And so, you know, places like the Housing Rights Coalition, you know, Mission Housing knows a lot of defense lawyers. Like, they're there to help people that need help, that don't have the means to go hire some rich, fancy lawyer.
This goes, I mean, in terms of what our federal government's doing, this is the antithesis, because they want to get rid of the immigrants. They want to get rid of, I think they just want poor people to go away.
Yeah.
You know, all of the...
Well, San Francisco does too. I mean, I don't think we can just put all of this on the federal government.
What?
I mean, we have decided that we are going to have just a little bit of subsidized affordable housing for low-income people, and then we're not going to build housing. And so the rest of market rate should not be luxury. Those two words should not be synonyms, right? Market rate should be middle income. The only reason that market rate means luxury right now is because we're in a shortage, and in a shortage, rich people win. And if we build a lot more housing, even if it's luxury housing, yes, we also need to have more money for subsidized affordable housing, but we need to end the shortage. And that's not just San Francisco, that's throughout the Bay Area. We have allowed, you know, I mean, single-family home-only zoning was designed to keep low-income and minority people out of neighborhoods. That's why they wrote it. It, you know, you can go through all of the laws when they put it on the books. It was there to keep people out of neighborhoods.
The freeways,
it is exclusionary.
You know, relying on a car. The redlining is essentially what that's
Explain
called.
Explain redlining. It's because it goes way
So redlining
back.
Is... back in the good old days, they essentially would take a red pen and circle the lower income neighborhood of a city or a town.
Like and, the Fillmore.
Or you know, what is now Transbay and you know, a lot of the Mission. And essentially, sometimes literally written into law of some cities, they would rank the areas that should get a loan. And if they
would be from the bank, a bank
loan.
Yeah,
right. And they would either literally make it illegal to give someone in the low income area a loan, or they would make it so that the realtor and the mortgage broker knew that that had to be more predatory, higher interest. And then the outer regions, more single family home and predominantly more white, they would get more favorable loans. And
they had more money.
And yeah, it'd be easier to get a loan. And so when you do that, you cut off the tax base. And you make it so that the outer regions have all the wealth and thus all the taxes and thus the best schools. And so it just perpetuates segregation and, you know, people really having an unfair advantage that lots of times I'm finding out they didn't even really know. I mean, I challenge you to ask a baby boomer what redlining is, and I would bet a lot of money that they don't realize.
Yeah,
that it
and I mean, and now they use rhetoric that, you know, it's like protect our community, and I, you know, when you have,
from what,
when you have someone who's like has a $2 million house, who's saying we need to protect our community, I'm like, you know, can you point to me and tell me who do you not want to come and be your neighbor, right? I mean, that's what it is. What do you mean when you say protect our community, right? When we're talking about wealthy West Side homeowners, and I hate to be so hard on them, but the rhetoric is really damaging. You know, they really don't want new people to come into their community.
Or like a 100% affordable project at 1296 Shotwell, a really great project for seniors and their care workers. It got appealed, like we were talking about before, because some people in Bernal Heights felt that their view was more important than human beings having housing. I think views get used a lot, especially in San Francisco. Oh, you're going to ruin my view.
Views and parking.
Yeah,
those are the two.
A project.
Views and parking.
Last year, a great nonprofit tried to build a new development out on Lombard, almost to where you get on the road to go to the Golden Gate Bridge. Mm-hmm. And to make it enough units to like fund for the subsidy to work out, it was going to hurt some views for some people in Cal Hollow. And those Cal Hollow people called their supervisor, and that project went away. And now there's 100 very low-income transitional-age youth who don't have housing.
Yeah. It's funny how the right size of a housing project is always smaller.
Right.
You never have anybody say, oh, this needs to be the right size development, and that means
that
larger.
You just double the unit.
Yeah. Well, which is what the YIMBYs are here to do, right? Like, we say the right size is twice as big, you know?
Well, I've had friends who moved out to the near the bridge, out Lake Street, around in there, because, they didn't want to be in the Mission because they wanted to be safe. They were older, and they wanted to be safe.
Fine.
I lived in the Mission for 50 years, you know?
Well, they're freeing up a unit for somebody else to come
full disclosure, my mom and dad live on 25th and Lake, so. But they're in a dense six-story building that didn't ruin the world when it was built. I really do want to stress
that. But they don't get robbed on the street. There's no drug addicts. Oh, wait,
no, but integration, integration makes people uncomfortable. I mean, like, that's totally, like, this is why we went through.
They're worried about people of color.
Totally.
Coming in and taking, you know, 100%. And stealing them and dirty and leaving garbage on the streets.
Forest Hills.
Because they're so dirty.
Yeah. Forest Hills, they're trying to build senior formerly homeless housing. It's a.
Say that again. I love that.
So in Forest Hills, there's a group of nuns, adorable nuns.
Catholic church homes.
Yeah. Who want to turn a church that is not being used much anymore in their parking lot.
It's less than a quarter mile from a Muni station.
Into senior subsidized affordable housing. And they've never really done anything like this before. So they didn't really realize what kind of a buzzsaw they were walking into. And the neighborhoods are really, you know, they've turned the corner a little bit, but they are hysterical about homeless seniors.
Those people moving in.
You know, and they try to be, and they'll park everywhere, and how can we make it? And there's another project that's
And they'll want to come in and rape me and steal.
Yeah, but literally, people are saying that, though. And if I could just.
I know they are.
If I could just speak to when a nonprofit affordable housing developer builds something, we also build a staff whose sole purpose is to interact with every single tenant every day and to interact with the surrounding neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So we actually, we perpetuate integration in a much bigger way than just providing housing for people. We integrate a neighborhood. You know, we have community rooms at the bottom of every one of our buildings that the whole neighborhood gets to use. And to say that moving, you know, homeless seniors in is gonna like unleash this epidemic of crime, and you know that's really
crazy.
Insulting the nonprofit just as much as the people.
Well, yeah, and all humans. It's
and
very
humans,
insulting
right.
to
yeah,
all,
and
humans.
All humans.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
This is KPOO San Francisco 89.5. I'm Judy Drummond. The show is Connecting the Dots. We've connected quite a few here today. Talking with Laura Foote Clark and Sam Moss. Laura's executive director of YIMBY, Yes in My Backyard, and Sam is executive director of Mission Housing. Okay, so this whole thing building housing, you've given some wonderful examples of, mm-hmm. you know, what's possible. But what are the biggest battles you fight?
Boy, I feel like that's what we're talking
It's like
about.
Endless battles.
Yeah, we have been. But
yeah.
I think, from my perspective, if I could go, I think that the affordable housing industry is really fighting the damage that redevelopment and public housing did to the notion of affordable housing.
Redevelopment.
Redevelopment was this agency that was a state agency, and in the 60s, it decided that the Fillmore needed to have economic prosperity and get, I'm making quote signs for everyone out there, get redeveloped. And
get rid of the black people.
Exactly. And so what they did was they said, well, don't worry. You'll get to come back. Well, yes, we're going to demolish all of your houses, and we're not going to give you anywhere else to live, but you'll get to come back. And
Maya Angelou wrote about that. She lived there.
Yeah, and so the Bayview, a lot of the people now living in the Bayview literally just got displaced from the Fillmore in the name of redevelopment. And so that went horribly, and that's actually what led the laborers and what was called the MCO, the Mission Coalition Organizations. Yes. The Mission was next, and the Mission neighborhood organized and started and said no.
I want to just interject. This was done by a group of businessmen and realtors in 1965. A whole treatise was written on the San Francisco will become the center, the financial center of the Pacific Rim. It will be the number one banking city in the whole Pacific Ocean, because they were looking forward to China and Japan and, you know, as them being the biggest currencies in the world, which they are. And that they would, their goal was to get rid of, they said in their statement, to get rid of black people.
Yeah. I mean, probably we did
that. They said
horrible,
that. They named it. Mm-hmm.
We did horrible things to our cities. You know, we blasted through them with highways. We, you know, the Fillmore is a great example. But, and this is not just San Francisco.
Right.
You know, every city in America, pretty much, we did some horrible things to. We had this idea that cities were scary and we needed to clean them up instead of saying, you know, so that we built highways and stuff to get you in and out to your suburban lifestyle,
right.
In and out. And that, you know, overcoming that anti-city bias is a big struggle for us.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, to get back what I was saying, when Forest Hill neighbors freak out, they hear low-income housing, mm-hmm. and they think a giant brick tower that is going to be built by redevelopment or the housing authority, and isn't, because those properties weren't taken care of. They didn't have resident services. You know, they were run down from day two. And that's just the complete polar opposite of what Mission Housing and all of our counterparts believe in. And I think a lot of my job, especially where we're building 100 units above the Balboa BART station right now, and the Excelsior is a typically single family, you know, kind of detached home neighborhood.
Are they fighting it?
There was some pushback 5 months ago, but I've been going to community meetings twice a week for that whole time. Laura and I joke around a lot about how many I should just put like community meeting on my whole schedule and like, that'll cover it. But they're coming along, and mainly it's because we took the time to educate them about the realities of current day low-income affordable subsidized housing and how it was nowhere near what they thought it was.
So I would say that while that's a problem and education is important, like the biggest problem there is that each person has the mm-hmm. ability to say no. They, you know, in this entire system, Sam has to run around and get buy-in from like every person in the neighborhood, because each one of those people has the ability to put roadblocks in front of
to file a lawsuit
mm-hmm. and go to the planning commission and demand a discretionary review here. That we've created 100 million different places for people to object to housing, and that's subsidized affordable and that's market rate housing. And when you create a system where any given community member can object and say, I don't want you building that near me. And, you know, they can do it for a variety of reasons. Maybe they're doing it because they, you know, are fearful of public housing. Maybe they're doing it because they just don't want to, like, lose the shadow on their vegetable garden, you know, like, or, you know, they're worried about their parking space or whatever. Like, they'll have a million different motivations to say why they like things the way they are and they don't want anything to ever change, and you can go F yourself.
So is there any resolution right now, maybe at the state level, that would
take care of it? Okay, so I'll plug my favorite piece of legislation. is SB 35. So that's Scott Wiener's proposal to basically expedite legislation through the process. So it's by right light. So if a municipality is really falling down on their regional housing goals. So these are numbers that are set at a larger level, but we can get into that. But basically, if a municipality is chronically underbuilding their regional housing obligation, then their projects get expedited through the process. It also has to have union labor in some degree or prevailing wage.
Affordable inclusionary percentages.
Affordable inclusionary percentages. There are all these sort of bells and whistles. But the basic purpose is to say, you know, if you're a municipality and you are chronically underbuilding housing, you know, it's time to step up.
And we're individuals can't just stop. But like, you know, if you're building it to the zoning and whatnot, those lawsuits that I that we're talking about me worrying about, they are no longer around.
Wow. So I guess just sort of wrap up, it's what can people do?
Well, they could join YIMBY Action.
No, sure.
How do they do that? How do people get in touch?
You can go to YIMBY, YIMBY, Action, ACTION.org, and hit join. And the free membership is down at the bottom, just in case anybody needs that. And we really do need people to get active. I think also sending just an email to your supervisor.
Yeah, yeah. Being
that
involved
says,
with your supervisor or elected official goes a really long, a lot farther than I think people realize.
Yeah, and the only
because
people,
they do vote on the laws.
They vote on the laws, and I think that they, you know, on a case by case basis, they hear from the local NIMBY, the local person who doesn't want something to happen.
Not in my
that has time to do that typically more than perhaps.
Well, I went to build a bathroom on my my second floor because I'm old, up and down the stairs to the bathroom, and I got some people who wanted to build it for me, and my neighbors complained because it took away their view. This is an old lady's bathroom, just off her bedroom, and it was like, you know, how big is a bathroom?
Well, if you need help, I can come to a community meeting for you.
They came to my planning meeting for the Department of Planning, you know, and tried to stop it. And thank God the planning department just went, she could build it 30 feet high if she wanted, you know. It's shut him up.
Running a, you know,
people think they have all this power.
Right.
Well, that's
a
game of roulette. I mean, they really do have a lot of power. I mean, this is the problem.
I think people like to exercise that power.
They do.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a drug, too, like getting up at planning and giving your speech and railing against, you know, your quality
and,
of life.
And you have the ability to say, I'm going to fight for my right to do what I'm doing. A lot of people go, oh, gosh, you know, my neighbor is going to be mad at me and is going to put all these obstacles in my way.
Yeah.
And like
caring,
am I really gonna like, you know, and
is
they give up
it? Should I have to fight
I mean,
for it?
I got involved in this because I had a neighbor who wanted to build, you know, take their one unit one story building and make a two unit two story building, and their next door neighbor like declared World War III on them and, you know, put every obstacle up, tried to rally the entire neighborhood to fight against that one new unit of housing that could have gone in. That was now 3 years ago, and that project is, you know, hasn't even submitted permit applications because they know that their next door neighbor is going to do absolutely everything they can to stop that one unit of housing.
I can't figure out why people, if you own something, you should be able to build. I've seen people on Bernal Heights lose their property because the neighbors complained where they couldn't even get the permits
to
build a house.
That goes towards, just to bring it back to the sequel and the lawsuits, like that's really how projects are killed, right? Because once the clock starts, once you have a construction company or, and you know, if you get a loan, like to service the debt, to be bound to that and to also know that you're going to have like 3 years before you're even going to start building and then another 2 years before it gets built, and so like you're at a decade before any revenue might come in, then it's like, what's the point? Let's just stop the project and go somewhere else.
Wow. Okay, so what about Mission Housing? How do people get in touch there? And
so,
what can people do? What
so missionhousing.org is our website. My contact information, we have a great community organizer named Chirag Bhatka. Marcia Contreras is our director of resident services. Everyone at Mission is there to help the entire neighborhood and all of San Francisco, really. One thing that we strongly believe in is that, you know, we're first and foremost have to take care of our 3,000 tenants, but if we're in a position to help any low or middle income people that need help, then we're going to do that. So going to our website, contact information's there, my email, cell phone, all of it. Feel free to reach out.
I want to ask one question, because I think a lot of people didn't vote in this last election.
Yeah.
For one reason or another. I just would like you to just talk about voting in general and how it impacts housing.
Oh, it's huge. I mean, this is also, it's hard because we have a lot of politicians who there hasn't been a pro-housing, pro-building housing voting bloc. And so the politicians haven't necessarily spoken to that very forthrightly. You know, they've been a little mealy-mouthed. And then people don't know how to vote based on being pro-housing.
And you can't get through those bills because they're so wordy.
Yes.
So,
you know, so we do, so the YIMBYs in San Francisco, and this is also why we need to start groups everywhere, you know, we do investigate candidates and we say, who's the more pro-housing candidate? And we make endorsements. And so people can know, okay, this candidate is going to be the one who's going to advocate for more housing, not just in their district, but throughout the city of San Francisco. And, you know, hopefully also, you know, San Francisco could potentially sue other municipalities for not building their housing. So, you know, there's a lot that the city could be doing to advocate for housing. That it's not doing because politicians aren't feeling that pressure from the community.
We have some good people now on our board of supervisors. Yeah, I mean, there's some good people there.
Yeah, we do. But I think that, you know, politicians get to the heads of parades. You know, so you find leadership when you have a parade, and there hasn't been there hasn't been, you know, a loud
enough.
Well,
we have a pro-building mayor. He's just not.
Well, I mean, we are.
He hasn't done, you know, he's constantly hamstrung by this.
We're building more affordable housing than most states in the country.
Are we?
Yeah, San Francisco's, especially with the fact that the redevelopment agency and the $2 billion a year that used to help us is gone, and HUD doesn't have a lot of funding. We are building a gargantuan amount. It's just, it's coming online. This is starting. You know, a lot of it is being designed or getting permits.
What brought that about?
You know, I just think that it was a long process of San Francisco's always been pro kind of affordable housing and things like that, comparatively speaking. And for instance, Treasure Island, there's going to be 8,000 new housing, 3,000 of them, you know, or give or take, will be affordable. That was a 12-year long permit process, basically. Like, jeez. You know, these things take a really long time.
And they don't have to.
Right.
Right. I mean, we've made a choice to say that this process takes as long as it does. You know, it's 10 years now that we've been talking about the Geary bus rapid transit. We have, as San Francisco has prioritized process over people over and over and over again. And we've decided that it's more democratic to make sure that everybody gets to say no to something rather than saying, okay,
yes. Right.
this serves the general good. Let's get on with it.
Wow. So people do need to vote. They need to get active. They need to
figure out, educated.
Mm-hmm. Go to your neighborhood meetings when you get the leaflets. I've gotten leaflets. You know, go to your neighborhood meetings. You know, but go.
Go.
Yes,
and,
go and speak.
Because
and
if they want to build, I've interviewed someone who wanted to do a marijuana shop out in the Excelsior.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And that whole meeting was crammed with people who didn't want it, and she wasn't able to do it. But,
yeah.
You know, it's like, so they can stop that.
They can stop everything.
And
they're trying to stop a Chinese food restaurant out in the Richmond. You know, I mean, yeah, there's, we need to sort of say, like, the city needs to take the next step forward and stand up for saying, you know, most of the people who receive these kinds of notifications crumple them up and put them in the trash. And,
mm-hmm.
and that you need to go out.
Go to the meetings.
Go to the meetings.
They're fun, actually. I enjoy them.
I love them.
Okay, so again, this is Connecting the Dots. I'm Judy Drummond, and we've been speaking with Laura Foote Clark and Sam Moss. And I thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's been very informative.
Thank you so much for having us.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.